It is Wednesday, September the 30th. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As always, let's thank the patrons of the podcast. So patreon.com/ The Mind and Fitness Podcast. If you feel like this podcast is giving you tremendous value and you would like to throw a couple bucks in the tip jar, that is what this is designed to do. So there's 24 of them. Let me give a quick shout out to Mindy and Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Ashley, Michael, Mike, Victoria, Chad, Anthony, Jennifer, Eddie, Jenny, Christina, Ross, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you all so much from the bottom of my heart for being patrons of the podcast. Wow. So something that just popped, and I wasn't even going to talk about this, but and it'll be very, very brief, but I realized that this Friday is actually the 3-year anniversary of the podcast. So I'm going to dig deep into my hard drive and see if I can find the very first episode. It wasn't much of anything. It was more of a here's what the podcast is about to be. But it's pretty interesting when you go and listen to that very, very first one and what I thought the podcast would be and then what it has turned into. So because it is vastly different from what I initially intended. Today's intro is super short because the interview is pretty darn long. It's a little over an hour, but it's with a past guest. And I talk about it in the intro of the podcast, but still to this day, it is the most listened to single episode on a release day that I've ever had for the podcast. And it goes all the way back to January of 2000. And I want to make sure I get this right. January of 2018 or 2019. It must be 2019. Hold on. Yes, first aired on January 16th, 2019. So Michelle was an awesome guest back then, and I got so much feedback. And one thing I thought was so interesting is that it seemed like her entire town of Thunder Bay, Ontario, listened to the podcast, which was so it was so great for her to be able to get her story out there. If you've never listened to that podcast, I would urge you to go back and find it because it is something else. It's a really amazing story from somebody. And then in this podcast, we talk about quite a bit different types of stuff. So I think that you're really going to like this as well. So Michelle does mind body sessions online, and she actually has an upcoming workshop on setting boundaries using somatic work. It's going to be most likely in mid-November, but she's going to be advertising on her Instagram, and you can go to her Instagram at Love with Michelle Renee. And so the spelling is a little different. It's Love with, and then Michelle is M-I-C-H-E-L-E. Renee, R-E-N-E-E. So at Love with Michelle Renee. She's got a lot of really great content on there. She has a lot to offer this world. So with that being said, here's Michelle. Oh, and one other thing also. So I think I talked about it a couple months back. I had got a new microphone and I used it on this podcast with Michelle. Was the first time, might be the only interview that I did with that new microphone. I just could not get the audio levels dialed in. So it's going to sound low on bass, high on treble. I wish that it sounded better. So Michelle, when you hear this, I apologize that my voice does not sound like it usually sounds as this is coming out. But hey, I'd love to do a part three with you. So maybe that's what we need to do. But yes, as I said, without further ado, here is Michelle. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and another returning guest. And from about 100 episodes ago, which is really wild. It's crazy because I'm looking back now and it was episode 53. And this was all the way back on, I don't have the date, but it was, it aired in January of 2019. So it feels, I'm sure to you as well, it feels many, 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 many years ago in terms of the last interview. So Michelle, formerly Hintzberger, now Michelle Drew, is on the line with me out of Thunder Bay, Ontario. Michelle, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, thanks so much for jumping on again. You know, what I would recommend is that if you're listening to this episode with Michelle and I, that you actually pause this if you haven't listened to the first one and go back and listen to part one, because
the design of today, in a lot of ways, is going to be kind of picking up where that last one ended, which is episode 53, and it's from mid or late January of 2019. So go back and listen to that, and then come back and listen to us today. but there were so many good pieces, and I've kind of been debating all morning how I want to go about this interview with the two of us, because I feel like the last one was so impactful, and to this day, it's still the single most listened to episode in the podcast history for a single day. You even beat Howard Schubiner, which is pretty wild. and part of me thinks maybe some of that is Thunder Bay. I don't know how big of a town it is, but I get the sense that it's a small town and everybody probably knows you or knows your story or, you know, knows a variety of things. Yeah. But it really kind of spread like wildfire when I had posted even to social that this was the thing. And I actually totally forgotten how we got acquainted. I didn't even remember that it was you commenting on something and saying, I've got a hell of a story. So, yeah. Maybe just to bring some people up to speed who maybe did listen to that a long time ago and now remember you, but maybe bits and pieces. I guess if you could give us maybe an abbreviated story of sort of your history with pain and symptoms and kind of how you went about treating them. And then I want to get into some previous pieces, some clarifications from the last episode, and then we'll kind of jump off into the new one. How's that sound?
Sounds perfect.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so I had always suffered but from mind-body afflictions as a child. Now looking back, you know, the stomach aches, the headaches, also a lot of like social anxiety, but things that I guess you just kind of, you didn't know, you just kind of shoved them away. In my 20s, that's when I started experiencing more pain. So I would get pelvic pain, I would get lower back pain, I would get more stomach discomfort, just different types of weird pains that I would kind of ignore. They would go away. And then in 2016, I believe it was, that was when my pain, specifically my pelvic pain, became more forefront and center, and it just felt like something I couldn't ignore anymore. And so of course I went the doctor route, got more and more scared. The system up in Canada is different than the States because it is a public system. So we have to wait a long time to see doctors, which did not help with my anxiety about the situation. Waiting to see doctors just brought out more anxiety, which eventually brought on more pain, more discomfort, different types of pains were popping up. I was having severe chest pain that felt almost like a heart attack, lower back pain. I was dizzy. I had that burning tongue for a little bit, what felt like indigestion. And yeah, they would just like travel throughout the body. But it, for me, what was the worst part was the pelvic pain. People out there on the TMS forum probably would recognize it as pudendal neuralgia. That would be like the scientific term for it. So it's really like pain in the saddle area. It's hard to sit. It's just incredibly uncomfortable and painful. And doctors were kind of trying to figure out what was going on. I was getting more stressed out. They couldn't give me concrete answers. I got like those weird answers about, well, like when I would ask, the pain's here, but yesterday it was down here. Like, what does that mean? And my doctor would just kind of say, oh, it's just transmission of pain. You know, like, I don't think he really even himself understood what was going on, but wanted to give me some sort of reassurance. And they gave me a couple different diagnoses. One being potentially nerve damage, nerve pain, which was what I suspected and which I was the most scared of. And then also endometriosis. But for me, that just didn't align. And so I kept searching. There was something in me that knew there was something else going on beyond this. And then I stumbled across a mind-body connection, healing pelvic pain Facebook group, and started reading into what those people's experiences were, what they were finding was helping, maybe what led up to their pain, questions they had, and it all seemed so similar, like how heat and cold would help, resting would help, And then I started diving more into Sarno's work because that's where I got kind of got introduced to that. Then from there, Zanich's work. And then from there, just the mind-body connection in general. And I went through a lot of ups and downs in about, I guess, from the time of figuring it out that it was mind-body would have been like in February of 2017. And then it wasn't until like December of 2017 that I really got like a hold on it and what I needed to do. And there was a lot of unlearning, relearning how to deal with fear, changing my relationship with fear, in order to kind of get through this pain and really get a hold on it. So I know in the last podcast we talked about, for me, what really helped was understanding the pain as a symptom of anxiety, and how my biggest thing was needing to change my relationship with fear. So I was able to do that through somatic tracking, questioning my belief systems, holding myself accountable, various mind-body tools, techniques. And then the man I was dating at that time, we got engaged. We got married August 25th, 2018. And then he passed away a week later in an accident, September 1st, 2018, and all my pain came back. But luckily, I had, and I said this in the last podcast, like going through TMS and recovering, I'll put in quotations because I don't know if that ever really, really, truly happens, really helped me with my grief. It helped me not feed into the pain anymore while going through the grief. But it also just showed me and reinforced how much our bodies will do to protect us, tell us something's wrong, kind of look out for us. And that's kind of my story of pain, I guess, in a nutshell.
There's a couple of things that really jump out at me, especially when I was re-listening to this. And your story is so unique. It's, in fact, unlike anybody else's that I have talked to. And however, on the flip side of that, one of the things that I said recently to somebody I was interviewing was that as unique as we kind of all think that our stories are, and they may be, there is a lot of crossover in a lot of ways to a lot of people. And like there's two people in my inner circle that I am thinking of as you are talking about this stuff, even now, that I think there would be tremendous applicability. And I wish that this is one of those times where I'm like, God, it would be so cool if you lived in Seattle, right? Because if you can meet these women, I think there would be so much cross-pollination and into what it is that the things that you have dealt with, one of which is a friend of mine. I've known her for 7 or 8 years. And even though I had met her so long ago, her and my wife are actually very good friends now. And that's just a coincidence. But she, a couple weeks ago, and there was a quote that I had sent you. I'm actually going to find it because I think it's impactful to people dealing with grief. And that's going to be a big focal point of this podcast, is especially in the last couple weeks, because as we record this, we're inching up on the anniversary of the wedding and the anniversary of the death. And so I think that your take on grief is very unique, because so many people, it's not that they deal with it in different ways, but I guess they almost, there's a big avoidance there. And so a friend of mine who she had, I think, I don't have the full story, but I think had walked in and found her mother had passed away unexpectedly. And I don't know, this, the tales are dicey. And obviously, I mean, she, it's been a rush of sadness and all the different things over the last couple of months or a few weeks that she's been talking about. But there was a quote that her mom had said, and her mom posted this on Facebook 8 years ago. And then my friend had reposted it, and it reminded me so much of a lot of the takes that you have. And it's that grief is not a disorder, a disease, or a sign of weakness. It is an emotional, physical, and spiritual necessity, the price you pay for love. And the only cure for grief is to grieve. And that last part, especially, the only cure for grief is to grieve, is a, I feel like it's a big central part of your messaging and kind of what it is that you're about. Can you just comment on the necessity of grief? Especially because there's a couple things. I mean, when you're telling the story about your mom on the last podcast, and even though like someone losing their hearing, you don't think of it as something to grieve over, but I actually think that grief is almost kind of like a central emotion, because we don't even realize it, but there is a grieving process, not over the loss of a loved one. I mean, that's not the only time. It could be quitting a job. It could be It could be a variety of things. And I think that the word that people don't go to is grief because it seems so much heavier, but actually it applies in a lot more places. Can you give us your scorching hot take on grief?
Oh, my scorching hot take on grief. Wow. Well, first of all, it's definitely something that is, I almost look at grief less of, as an emotion itself and more as like an experience. I think there's emotions within grief. That's the first and foremost thing about grief. Grief, like people say, comes in like waves. Like it hits you really hard at first. It is so difficult to go through. Your whole being just does not want to go through it. It wants to push it away. Grief in any capacity can completely immobilize us. We lose perspective. We lose ourselves a lot. And for me, the only way, and because I was able to tap into my intuition because of the work I had done with TMS pain, was realizing that life is going to have grief. Maybe not everybody will go through what I've gone through to that capacity, but in some way there is going to be a down in your life and it's going to suck. But if we put walls up to our grief, we're putting walls up to an experience that we are having that is part of us.
Yep.
It is literally us in that moment. And in order to really love who we are and honor our experience as human beings on this earth going through a loss, we need to be with whatever comes up. Society doesn't talk about death very often. It is a taboo, even though we are all going to experience and we are all going to go through it. And for me, it was just like shoved in my face, right? And I just really realized that in order to survive through this, which was really what it was at first, really just survival, was to honor where my grief was in that moment, whether that was crying all day in bed, whether that was feeling shut down, like the world wasn't really like revolving at all, whether that was needing to go out with friends, whether that was putting up boundaries with friends. I just really realized grief was my biggest lesson in learning to love myself. Because we have this fear that if we give into grief, which is such a heavy experience and comes with such heavy emotions, that we're going to, that is what we're going to lose. That is how we're going to lose ourselves. Sorry. And that it will never stop. But the thing is, if you're going through a grief as big as what I've gone through, or even as small, if you push it away, if you push that trauma away, if you push that micro trauma away, if you push it down into your system, your nervous system, it's going to fragment into your life. It will, because you're teaching your brain that your experience is not okay to have. You're not honoring your truth in the moment as it is. You are not honoring the love you felt for that loved one, the joy you felt at that job, whatever it may be, that you have now lost. And therefore, it is not okay for you to be you. And in order to get through it so it doesn't fragment into your life, it doesn't kind of cause you more grief down the road, coming out in different ways, is by honoring it. We really just need to learn that somatic tracking, remove our fear from the grief experience ourselves, and let it flow and shift us and change us. Because I think grief, for me, my biggest lesson through grief and honoring my grief is that at the core of who I am is love. As kind of like woo-woo as that seems, it's true. Without losing Evan, I probably would have never really realized how much I want to enjoy life, even if every day it's not perfect, quote unquote. But that it is so important to do, because we have these experiences to remind us that we are human beings having a human experience on this earth, and it could be taken away from us at any moment. So really just honoring that experience of grief allows you to honor other experiences of joy and gratitude in your life down the road.
Yep. There was something you said, and I wrote it down because I want to get some clarification, because I think it's, and I'm not being a total shill to the things that you say, but there's so much good stuff. And that's why, I've got a whole list of things I'm going to bring up. But there was something you just said that I thought was so interesting, and I just want to get a little bit deeper with you on that. You said that a big component of this was questioning my belief system and holding myself accountable. Can you talk a little bit more about, because I have my, I'm wondering if how your take on questioning my belief system is exactly how I feel, because I've been trying to figure out a way to put that into better words, and that might be about as perfect as I can think of, but we may be thinking about two totally different things too. So yeah. Can you just elaborate a little?
Yeah, may as well dive in and see if we're on the same page. So I think like we're born into this world. We do have some personality traits we're born into, with, but we collect these beliefs and personality traits according to how the world responds to us, how we expect ourselves to respond to the world and vice versa. And we create this belief system and these stories in our mind about not being good enough, not, or needing the big house, needing this, needing that to prove our self-worth. And when I was starting to really dive deep into like somatic tracking, and what was coming up was I'm holding on to these beliefs that are just like keeping me small, that I don't even really believe in, to be honest. Yeah. Like at a core, a nice house is great, but it's not something that proves my worth at a core level. And I think I needed to start kind of questioning those things that like society has thrown onto us, or our parents have kind of shown us, our friends or whomever it is, to be able to get back to what is true for us and how we want to show up in the world, as opposed to honoring a belief system that really isn't how we want to show up in the world.
Yeah, that's about as close to what I... to what I was thinking as there could be. There's certainly been a lot of times for me in the last few months, year or so, where I'm, and the trouble is that it would certainly be much better served if I could actually say these to certain people that have long-standing anxiety issues that I know. Like, there's a lot of people, when you had talked about treating, you have all these individual issues, but when you treated the anxiety in the Paul David book and all that kind of stuff, and that was really kind of like the nucleus of it, and then it solved a lot of other problems. Gosh, like one of my best friends has this crazy anxiety, developed multiple sclerosis. She's my age, by the way, or a year younger maybe. So MS, and suddenly is having these really crippling headaches. And I got her connected with Dr. David Hanscom, and she was kind of buying in, and then had discovered there was some mold in her house, and now is attributing all of her symptoms to this mold. And I had said, does your husband get these same headaches, or does your son get? And no. And I mean, because in my head, I'm just thinking, like, you sort of need to get to a point to where you can say, maybe everything that I believed is completely wrong. And that's kind of where I had to get with, I'm an athlete, and so I'm very, and have been very body conscious. I know the anatomy really well. I know the muscular system really well. So to me, all the injuries that I felt were piling up over an amount of time, I could logically say I did this really heavy movement and that's why my back did this certain thing. But then when I kind of got into all this stuff that we're talking about now, me being able to say, maybe that was just like a crock of shit and I don't know everything. But that's really tough for people to be able to say, is that I don't know everything.
Yeah. And actually I listened to a podcast on the other day. I posted it to my story. It was Brené Brown, and I forget who she was talking to. I forget his name. Sorry,
you introduced me to her too, by the way.
Yeah. Amazing. She's awesome. but he used to be one of the Surgeon Generals of the United States. So he is this very like astute, decorated physician. And this podcast is all about loneliness and the lack of connection that people really, really have in this world. And she was kind of questioning, because he's starting to now shift his practice more into kind of what we're talking about, how emotional intelligence is so needed and so required to feel healthy, like at a core level, whether it's pain, anxiety, depression, whatever it is, coping mechanisms that are unhealthy. And I was just like, wow, this is like a very astute doctor talking about this. And then she kind of said, you know, where do you think the paradigm, why do you think that has been lost? Like, why are more people not realizing this? And he said, well, I think partially, partially we know money has to do with it. But also you only know what you're taught. So doctors go to medical school and they're only taught a certain way. And then they teach people this, right? The patients start taking on this information and we start ingraining it into our belief system. Media ingrains that into our belief system. I mean, if that's all we're seeing, of course that's what we're going to believe. And I also think that there is a part of us that wants to heal so much from these layers and belief systems that we put on top of ourselves and society has helped with. But it's scary. Like, this work can bring up a lot of discomfort, a lot of grief as well, because you're kind of starting to see the world and belief systems for what they are. And kind of shifting your identity. So it is quite scary. And I think it's easier for people sometimes to live thinking that the answer is outside of them, because then you don't need to take responsibility for yourself and your own healing. But the funny thing is, it's not really only taking responsibility for yourself and your own healing, because I think it is very important for us to realize that at the top tier of our nervous system and its health and its flow state is social engagement and connection. I'm not sure if you've ever dived into like the polyvagal theory. I'm sure you have. No. Mm-hmm. So it's a theory developed by Dr. Porges, I believe, in like the early 2000s. And basically, at the top of our nervous system is our social engagement system. So this is when we feel like our needs are being met. We're in flow. We can talk with people. We connect with people. Music feels great. We're creative. Stresses happen. Our system gets activated. We go into fight or flight and we get stressed out. But we're supposed to come back down to our flow state and be able to socially engage and everything again. So connection and social engagement through healing is so important. So it's less about like feeling like you need to do it on your own, which can be like something people just push away, but opening up to the idea that, yeah, I can do it on my own, but I also can accept help. I don't think a lot of people know how to accept help. Like our nervous system and all these things are so, it's so smart, like these beliefs and these core wounds and everything work together to kind of like dismiss stuff like TMS, because what is the patterns that have kept us in these states of disease and stress to the brain and the body have been working. They've mm-hmm. kept you alive. You haven't died yet. So they want to hold on to them. And I think it's really like a deeper thing than just like logically understanding it. I think the information is starting to come out more now, and all this stuff is starting to be more popularized, and more people will be more open to this. But like I said, if people only know that mold is the issue or riding my bike was the issue, that's what they're going to go to.
Yeah.
You know,
it's kind of why, cause we're connected. You and me, like my personal Facebook page as an example. And I very rarely, especially in the last year and a half, share much about this podcast at all on there. And some of it has to do with every time that it is shared, I feel like it's this really profound thing that I'm posting, whether it's an interview that I did with somebody or a press mention that I got or something like that. And really it gets the least amount of love from people that I know that are like, you know, in my family members or whatever. And I remember there was like a year and a half ago where I'd shared something. I don't know. There was something that had come up that I felt was worthy of posting. And it was just, it had said in it, you know, that the root of longstanding disease and like that there's more research coming out in the University of Colorado at Boulder is doing this fMRI study and all this stuff. And I got this like one line comment from my older brother, and he said, except when the pain is real. And I was just kind of like, this is why I don't talk about this stuff. I do it a little bit more on Instagram, just because it's sort of like you're throwing it out there into the universe, and that's kind of it. There's not as much of this, social network expectation that I may have versus like a personal Facebook page. The stuff you're talking about is totally why I don't really even bother talking about a lot of it out loud anymore. And I know that there was a period of time, like Steve Ozanich, who you mentioned earlier, and I've interviewed him on the podcast. He used to run the biggest TMS Facebook page on Facebook. And it's the one that I now currently manage or admin very passively. But he just got to a point where people were questioning that this stuff even existed or was real or could be healed that way or whatever, that he just like, I'm not doing it anymore. And he just, you know, almost, and that's kind of the people that I know that met Dr. Sarno when he was still alive or worked with him or even was a patient of him, just said that his tone towards the very end of his life was almost just kind of like, it reminded me a lot of like Martin Luther King's tone. We think of Martin Luther King as I have a dream and very much out there and all this stuff. But if you listen to his later interviews that happened maybe in the mid 70s, his tone changed a lot from I have a dream to we're not making the kind of progress that we need to make. Almost not like he's giving up, but you know what I mean? And Sarno kind of had the same thing where I've tried to pitch this and I'm the laughingstock of my profession and all this kind of thing. And why even bother anymore?
Yeah.
This is where I'm going to totally fanboy all the stuff that you talked about in the previous episode, and you can choose to respond to these things or not. And then I kind of want to get into what you've been doing the last little while and how I goaded you into this interview in the first place. So these were all notes from the interview we did last time. You had said, that being in my head, really meant that I didn't feel things in my body. And I thought the reason I thought that was so interesting was that, I think you're going to agree with this. I got to a breaking point at the end of we hit our walls almost at the exact same time, the late summer of 2016, you and me. And that was one thing we had in common. And then when I was thinking back, I was like, why didn't I have these major back issues going on, you know, going back years or whatever like that. And because I was in my own head, I didn't even recognize that they were there, that I was having these various issues. Has that evolved? Or I guess maybe if you have any thoughts to add on the being in my own head comment, that I didn't feel things in my body. Do you have anything to add?
Oh yeah. It is hard. It's again, one of those things that we have not been taught to do. and it goes back also to like, it goes even deeper than that. It goes back to like our infancy, something called attunement by our parents. If we were an infant and we cried out and our needs weren't met constantly, we learned that our emotions were not valid in a very, body oriented way. 'Cause infants obviously cannot logically think about that, but they start developing shame and guilt about their own emotions and feelings. And we shut those down. And that is where the disconnect begins for a lot of people. It could also happen through like a trauma, micro traumas adding up, just various things. But I think what's been so important to me is working on that connection with my body, just feeling into it as I can, as much as I can. And it's really starting to blossom now. So I've been doing this work for about 4 years. And I am starting to be able to access what my needs actually are and what my wants actually are at like a core level, so that I can develop, I can show up for myself and show up for other people as best as I can. And so I'm definitely living less in my head and more like connected between the two of them, where the intuition can actually come out, and the wisdom can actually come out and speak to me, so I can make more aligned decisions with my life. But that's a process. It's such a huge process. And I just went through about like 3 weeks of severe anxiety where I was just completely disconnected, and I had not had that in a very long time. So it reminded me of what it felt like. And I realized I was ignoring my needs. what I really needed at a core level to move through where I was. And I was able to tap into my body. I did some mind body work myself with a friend who is also into this kind of work. And I realized what I needed. And the crazy thing is, once I was able to get out of my head and more into my body and make the decision that aligned with my need, my nervous system literally relaxed. It was like that weight off your shoulders. It was just like, yes.
Can you elaborate on
that? Right.
And maybe the answer is just literally like going into the body. Maybe that's the answer. But when you say attending to your needs, what did you discover that were the needs that needed to be met?
So basically, I had was dating somebody for the last 6 months, and I realized I was just in a place where I needed to honor my grief in singlehood further. I just realized I needed to show up for myself without kind of like relationship distraction, as bad as that kind of sounds. It's just that was the need that was at the core. My want was to continue that relationship because I care about him. I loved him. He's shown up for me so much. But there was something inside of me once I connected to my body and was able to like understand more what it was telling me, because it was about 3 weeks of me making this decision and going through severe anxiety about it. Because my want for a long time, that belief that we talked about, was that my worth is validated by men. And I think that is vice versa for males and females, where they need to be validated by a partner. But within me, there was something that was just like, Michelle, in order to actually start working on what you need to remove yourself from the situation so that you can put yourself first and show up for yourself first and maybe down the road another relationship. So that's kind of like, I guess, a real life example of like working through that. And I was ignoring my body. I was ignoring what it was saying. And the panic was just getting worse and worse and piling up and piling up. And it was just screaming at me. I started getting eczema. My pelvic pain was coming back. I had chest pain again. And I knew deep down, you know, that that was what I needed. But the brain was like, no, well, relationship is good. Loneliness is not good. Let's stick in this, even though it doesn't really feel right now. We're going to do this because this is what society tells you is right. This is what society tells you is going to make you happy. When really accessing my body and what it was saying, and this does not come overnight. This is a practice that you develop over time. I was able to say, okay, what is the core need? What is the core wound? The wound was that I feel invalidated without a partner due to things that have happened in my life. And the need underneath was that I need to validate myself before I can really take on a partner and be in partnership.
Did you have any, because I'm a Matt, you know, you said this kept building and building, and this symptom comes back, that symptom comes back. This is a several weeks or maybe even longer than that process. Before you started before you kind of went a little bit more inward. I mean, you have such a long and extensive history of dealing with this kind of stuff. And it's knocking on the door again at you. Did you have any guesses that this is something else? Or was it like, Michelle, you know that this is about the relationship and you're not addressing it? Or was it like, maybe it could be these other things? And I mean, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the brain was kind of like, oh, it's because you're overworking. Partially, but I think I was also overworking because I was trying to not feel that emotion of needing a change. So the brain will play games, right? The brain wants to logically figure everything out. And I think that by accessing the wisdom between the body and brain, because it's not just you go all on emotions or all on logic. There is kind of a combination of the two. And I kept kind of pushing away that, like, yeah, that core, you need this shift. by blaming it on other things. First, because that's default. That is my default pattern. And I was blaming it on attachment wounds, which it could have partially been that. But I realized I was just not at that point because of the attachment wounds I developed as a child into my adulthood, and also the trauma I experienced just over 2 years ago. That wound wasn't ready to be completely touched yet, mm-hmm. of being in a relationship, of accepting love, of giving love, of holding space for all of that. And that's when I really accessed what I need right now. And what I need right now is me time, more grief time, more creative time just for me.
Yeah.
And because, again, it's a belief that we are not really valid people unless we're in a relationship. We see that all over the place. That I was pushing that away. I was fighting that insight that my body and my brain were giving me, which was causing more distress ultimately.
Going back to some of my notes, let's see here. So some of these I want to save for sort of the grand finale. Bear with me for just a second. Oh, okay. So, and you've mentioned it since we started talking just today. You would have this line that being with other people is very healing, having like actual relationships in the meeting in person. And you'd also talked about like social media. You didn't use the word facade, that social media is kind of a facade, but it certainly can be. People can have one persona on social media and then they wipe the eye makeup off and they go back to doing whatever it is that they would do in their lives. And I will tell you that deleting Facebook off of my phone 6 weeks ago was one of the best things I've ever done for that specific reason. I don't think everybody hates each other anymore, but I sure did think that about a month and a half ago. How have you navigated personal relationships in a global pandemic? It's very different in Canada right now, at least based on the stats I see, than it is in the US. So that's a little bit different. But how do you manage that when there's so much more we're stuck at home?
Yeah, it's hard. And I actually took a somatic course on this with Peter Levine when COVID started, because I was trying to think, you know, it is very different in Canada. Our cases are a lot lower, especially where I am. I think we're at zero cases again because I'm in a smaller community. And so Peter Levine was talking about showing that video of Italy where everybody was on their terraces playing music. That's connection, mm-hmm. you know? We might not be able to be face to face and touch each other, which is so important. That's honestly what worries me. Like, of course I worry about the virus, but the implications beyond the virus of what this is going to do to people's mental health, what this is going to do to adolescents and youth growing up, thinking that people are scary because connection is so important. What I've realized is if you need social media to connect, even if it's a very surface way, if that's what you need right now to get through this, that's what you need right now to get through this.
Yep.
That is where you are. But also realizing things like music are created by other people. That's connection to other people. Books created by other people. That's connection to other people. Any type of creativity is connection to other people. One thing, if you're able to go get a coffee or you're able to actually go pick up groceries, even if you are in face masks and stuff, say hi to the cashier. How are you doing? Those small interactions, what you're going to do is activate their part of the social engagement nervous system as well as your own. So you're both going to feel better after that engagement. So it's becoming more creative in these things and realizing that even if you're home alone and you're watching TV or you're listening to music and dancing, that is connecting with other people. And the way that you can do that is, and really feel that connection, is feeling into your body. What does that feel like? What does it feel like to dance to music that was created by other people or read a story that was created by other people? You know, like realizing that we're all so connected in different ways, not just face to face or touch to touch. And just knowing this will end eventually, we don't know in what capacity, when, obviously. But again, if these are the little things you need to get through, like the social media connection, listening to music connection, that's what you need to do. And I'm sure you agree with this. Shutting the goddamn news off. Like, fear on fear on fear on fear. That's just what they're throwing you and at you. And it, yes, it's good to be informed, but getting obsessed with it is going to cause you more harm. So
the first 2 weeks, I think of like March 15th ish, right? That's sort of like the NBA shutdown, and then the kids got sent home from school, and I was glued to the news for 2 straight weeks, like almost like things are going to change, right? Hit like refresh. And I haven't been as obsessed with a news story like that since the Malaysian Airlines flight got lost, presumably in the Southern Indian Ocean in 2014. That was another story where that probably went on for 6 to 8 months. I'd wake up at 2 a.m. and I was thinking about it, and I'd be searching online, and I'd go on Twitter, and I'd do it. And that was the same thing with the virus. And it has been so nice to not check CNN, not do this or whatever. My wife and I subscribe to Apple News, and I was thinking, here we go. Like, I have easier access to all this stuff. But the nice thing is that because it's adaptive, and so I can say that I want to see stories about motorcycles. I want to see stories about the outdoors. I want to see stories about hiking.
Yeah.
I want to see stories about home improvement projects. And like, that's what I get. And so that it's so much better. I think the grocery store thing is really interesting, because I've had this thought for a few months now that I go on, there's it's not a walking path by any means, but it's literally a straight line where I can walk to this park. It's 1 mile there, it's 1 mile back, and it takes 36 minutes on the dot, like clockwork. And so I'll do that walk one, maybe two times a day. And literally just the act of, if I were to think a year ago, if I'm walking on the sidewalk and the person that's on the sidewalk walking towards me goes to the other side, I probably would have thought, the fuck is wrong with that guy? But now when they do it, or when I do it, I get this really like nice communal sense where I'm just thinking, we're in this together, and it sucks to cross the street, but we're in this together. And I will say 95% of the time, there is a wave and a how are you doing? And that did not exist on walks a year ago. So even though it's a little jacked up because we're in this pandemic and people are more afraid of germs and being closer and all that kind of stuff than they ever have been in my life, there is a really interesting sense of community that has sprung in the last 5 or 6 months.
Yeah. Like, that gives me goosebumps because it's so true. Like, I think before COVID we were in this world where we're so enclosed and what we are told is important, and being pulled away from society and community, we realize how important that is. Right. Yeah. So yeah, just even if you are the 6 feet away on the other side of the road, hey, how are you? You know, that's connection. Mm-hmm. And it might not be the grander connection that we're used to, but if that's, again, what we need to get through these moments, these times, months, years, whatever it's going to be, then that is what we need right now.
And when I'm out riding my bicycle, or I'm out riding my skateboard, I keep a neck gaiter around my neck. And if I'm coming up towards somebody, I can see them in the distance, and they're not wearing a mask, I'm not wearing a mask, and I literally just make the gesture of, I pull my mask down and I pull it up over my nose, and I see they do the exact same thing. And then there's a wave, and I'm like, fuck, that's like, it's tough to describe, but it's like the sense that, like, you've got my back, I've got your back kind of thing. I don't know. I think, like, of all the weird stuff and stuff that's going to come out of this pandemic, like, for me, it's that I've spent more time with my kids in the last 6 months than I ever could have imagined, for the good and the bad. You know, there's a new puppy in the household, right? So there's like all these new things, but that element of, I don't know, a strange connection is very valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so, so, so true. And I'm going to challenge you, and I'm going to challenge the viewers. When you do have that connection and that strange feeling, that's something that you can drop into your body. So mostly your torso is what I mean by your body, but eventually we'd want to connect the whole thing. What does that feel like? That weird feeling, that weird connection? Like, does it feel light? Does it feel bubbly? What does it feel like? Really, like, sink into it, allow it to happen. That's when we get things shifting a bit.
It's kind of the perfect pivot. So I've got 26 minutes left on this memory card before we're going to be forced to have the conversation. Not to say that I don't have adulation for everyone that I interview, but I feel like there's a really special connection when you and I get on and we do these. And so there was a few months back where I had you had started posting much more on your social media about somatic tracking. You were doing training on it, and there was kind of a lot of content that you started putting out. Because when I first met you, content was not the thing. I knew you as the woman in Thunder Bay with the story that made the really cool nails. That was how I knew. That was kind of how I knew you.
I still make cool nails.
Yeah, you still make cool nails. But then you started doing content and everything. And I had asked you, do you feel comfortable coming back and talking about it? You said, not at this point, but there will be. And then, you know, 2 weeks ago, I got the message from you, hey, I think I'm ready. So that tells me there's something maybe recently that you feel like you've gotten even a better grasp of, or there's some sort of a milestone in your training or learning or development or whatever that you feel like this needs to get out there. So that's what I want to go to now. So what have you been working on for the last 6 months-ish to a year?
Yeah, so really harnessing everything I've gone through, everything I've learned, getting more education. Eventually, I would love to go get even deeper education, obviously, once COVID has kind of really surpassed and we're more in the green zone and I can travel for these things. But I am working on developing a self-love mentoring coaching program that really focuses on shedding the layers that have held us back, shifting our relationship with fear so that we can step into authentic resilience, because shit's going to keep happening in your life, whether or not you want to like accept that. Stresses are going to happen, but does that mean life is not worth living? No. Yeah. Life is worth living. We just need to develop more resilience to get through those things so that we can see them kind of for what they are, lessons often. And I just think it's important for me, knowing this work, even if I get backlash for it, or some people don't believe it, or some people think it's hokey, that I reach as many people as I can to start their journey. Because I think back to like my mom, for instance, and everything she went through, how her life could have been so different if this was more mainstream. How my life could have been different if this is more mainstream, how many people's lives could be more different. And I just think it's my duty now, knowing this work, now also that they're having more scientific evidence with it. So somebody like me who needs that, instead of just trusting the process and the universe, that there is a method to start healing these TMS patterns, this depression, anxiety, this lack of not being enough, these core wounds that have been through us within us for so long that we're all so desperately trying to get away from. I mean, fear manifests in anger. We see that all over social media, especially with COVID. People are angry. People are very angry. And that's not just because of COVID. We all know that is a lot of built up stuff, especially like seeing from Canada, looking into the States, also in Canada though, too, we are not perfect here. But that fear comes from somewhere. That doesn't just happen. And that anger comes from somewhere. It doesn't just happen. And I think at a core, as woo as this is going to sound, we're energy. We're literally atoms, cells, molecules, blood, we're all energy. And at the core of our energy, we are love in a deeper sense, not love in this romantic sense, but just love in this like belonging, communal sense. And I think it's so important to start shifting the narrative towards that. And there's reasons why people are in fear, and there's reasons why people are in anger. Let's talk about that instead of just consequences for those things.
It makes me think of, you know, here, so George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis several months ago, and there have been, it depends on what going back to the news, depends what news network you listen to, what sort of rhetoric you will use to describe what's going on. But Seattle was sort of this hotbed. We were really the COVID capital of the world for the first month. It was where for the first, the first 3 weeks, I think we accounted for like 85% of the deaths in the world was right here. Assuming that the numbers coming out of China were accurate, which we don't know if they were not. So let's just say the United States or North America. But the riots that then began, I feel like a lot of the anger that was being discussed was around the people that were destroying businesses and the protests that were happening. Whereas, you know, the root of that anger is elsewhere. It's not that these people showed up to destroy these businesses. It came from something else, and that there wasn't enough and still isn't enough. And there's becoming a little bit more. But into why did these protests happen in the first place? And because there's something else that's there. So you're sort of, it goes back to the Western medical model we talked about 40 minutes ago, that we're not necessarily like we act in a certain way or talk in a certain way because that's what we're taught. But we're really sort of ignoring what's going on underneath and just kind of going after a symptom, but not necessarily a cause.
Exactly. At a core, the African-American community, I mean, I don't want to speak for them totally, but my perception is that they don't feel like they don't belong because they've been shown that over and over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, like their values, their needs have not been heard or met. Of course, there's going to be anger. And for some people, the looting and the rioting was the only way they knew how to express that anger. But we're human beings and they were having a human experience. We cannot take that away from them just because we might not agree with what they were doing. But we're ignoring largely the systems that are in place that are keeping people feeling like this, as opposed to looking at models and introducing systems that can help people work through these things instead of punishing them for doing things based out of a human experience and a lack of human needs being met.
One of the things that makes me think about is looking at the demographics of people that are getting very sick, and the death rates in COVID lie a lot in minorities. And that's sort of where the data kind of stops and where the explanation sort of stops. But if you look at Dr. Hanscom talked about this with me off air, but he was just saying a lot of it has to do in the systemic portions of it, the lower income levels, the poor diets. And I mean that in a sense that less access to better jobs, less access to better money, less access to bigger companies, less access to essentially just more wealth. So you can't necessarily afford not just the food or the nutrition, but really access to anything. You might be now cramped in a small apartment building where there's lots of circulated air that may or may not contain infected respiratory droplets, right? Versus having a big old piece of land because you landed a really awesome job. And I mean, white privilege is definitely real, and we don't need to spend too much more time talking about that sort of stuff. But that's the kind of thing that really needs more discussion, not the Nike store had the brick thrown through it.
I agree. 100%. The humanness behind this. We're missing the humanness. We're only seeing the symptom, the throwing the brick at the Nike store. We're not seeing the humanity. We're not seeing the fear at home, the where ends going to be met. You know, like I was talking to a friend who lives in Mexico with her boyfriend, who is, he's higher privilege, but she never grew up higher privilege. So she's kind of observing what's happening in Mexico. It's very bad in Mexico from what I've read and everything. And I was like, yeah, I guess it's because, like, you know, less access to healthcare, the government isn't doing what they need. Of course that. But she said also because people are so poor here, they cannot afford to just socially distance. They can't.
Yep.
They're more worried about getting food on their table today than this virus, you know? And if that means they might catch it and they might die, what else are they supposed to do? They're going to die of hunger and starvation otherwise.
Yep.
So there's so much more to this picture, and that is hard for me to even comprehend because I have a nice house. I have money. I don't need to worry about that kind of stuff. And I think a lot of people who are in a position similar to mine don't realize that not everybody is. And the humanness and the human emotions that come along with that and the fear and the anger need to be addressed more than what they have done in reaction to that.
Well, that's an angle I never thought we were going to go.
Neither.
So what sort of things are you going to be, I mean, give me an example of some of the offerings that you're going to have as we wrap into the last 5 or so minutes. What are some of the things that you're going to be doing? Because you were the first person that I had interviewed that started talking about somatic work. And then since then, there's been a cascade of people that have come on and talked about it. And that's just a coincidence. I assume it is. But for me, it's definitely a top three in my toolkit. It may be a top two, but it's kind of like, for me, it's like somatics, questioning all beliefs, and sleep, for me, bigger than any other three things that I can do to keep any symptom that I could have at bay and to heal myself like Iron Man, basically, is kind of how I see it. Talk about some of the offerings and some of the stuff you'll be doing.
Yeah, so right now I'm doing like one-on-one mentoring. I do Reiki work, so that is more for me. There's a belief behind Reiki that it's Reiki energy. For me, I believe it is also potentially Reiki energy, but human energy, the connection, which settles down the nervous system. And within, I do like these mind-body sessions, I call them, and we do Reiki. We also start connecting in a somatic way to your body. So I explain what's happening, why the nervous system is doing what it's doing, why these patterns are showing up, that those beliefs are kind of showing up for you. Sleep is important, hugely important. But diving into getting us reconnected with our bodies. I mean, our brain shuts down the connection between our body for a reason, out of survival, but it's not meant to stay like that. But because of the society we live in that does not really feel emotions have a place, we continue down that road. And it is so important for our own health awakening to start connecting with our body. When we do that, parts of our brain turn on that were shut down and start communicating better together. And I teach my clients through somatic work, meditation, discussion, assessing their needs and wants, to start activating and cultivating a sense of themselves that they've lost for so long, but is there. It's just hidden beneath layers of different things that have piled onto us. And we can start shifting and moving those patterns. And people might say, why is that work important? I'm fine the way I am right now. That's fine. If you're fine the way you are right now, totally cool. But we are going to see more disease. We are going to see more illness if we do not start doing this work. They are starting to come out with so much evidence that different diseases like autoimmune diseases, we know pain is connected to our nervous system and not moving and shifting through these things and regulating our system. And if anybody wants to look that kind of stuff up for a little bit more evidence, there is a great book called Not When the Body Says No. That's Gabor Maté. It's by Dr. Van Besselkoek, and it is When the Body Keeps the Score. He is a psychiatrist, trained in Boston, worked at Harvard, and just started kind of questioning the modern psychiatric model. And started working with trauma and PTSD and microtrauma and realizing there is way more to this than just fixing the brain. This has a lot to do with the body, the nervous system, the way we hold on to stress, everything like that. So you can check out that if you need a little bit more evidence. Same, Irene Lyon has a lot of work on this. She is a Canadian, actually, and she is probably forefront in this whole type of healing, somatic healing. And getting reconnected back to the body and ultimately back to ourselves. So I do one-on-one training with that. Eventually I am going to start getting into like online workshops. But right now I'm just listening to my body and what feels right for me and my intuition. It's kind of guiding me along this path. And yeah, so that's kind of what I've been up to and what I hope to offer to people.
How I talked about the content that you've started dripping out there. Where do people find you?
So I mostly do it everything on Instagram, which is at Love with Michelle Renee. So Michelle with one L. Pretty simple. Everything's on there. I have a Facebook as well. That is Love with Michelle Renee, but my Instagram has like all the stories and everything like that in there.
And Renee is one E, two E's.
Two E's, two sorry, E's. Yeah. Okay. So Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, Renee is R-E-N-E-E.
And you had given a couple of resources, different books and things like that, and people that are leaders in the field. It makes me think of, this is just the last plug that I'll do, because I feel it's so relevant right now. He's the chief medical correspondent for CNN's Dr. Sanjay, can't remember his last name, but he, there's a documentary on HBO, which you can get a free trial for 7 days. It's worth it just to literally go watch this documentary, but it's either called The United States of Stress or The United Stress of America. And it is literally talking about how we're inundated with news and fear and all this kind of stuff and the devastating impact that has on the body. And he's talking about more of the really serious diseases that most people would say, there's no way that, you know, my shitty job or my bad income levels or whatever has to do, there's no way that that has to do with the disease that I have. And he connects the dots in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so same with
that podcast, sorry, again, that I listened to with Brené Brown. It's one of her most recent ones and it's about loneliness. One of the head medical doctors in the States, same thing. Mm-hmm. All these diseases are connected.
Yeah. Anything you want to close with? We're at an hour and 3 minutes right now.
Now we're in 3 minutes. Anything I want to close with? Just know that we're going to get through this. We will connect. Use this time to connect to yourself and really kind of honor what you need for connection in this time in terms of creativity. Right now, if you can try your best to find something creative that brings you an inner sense of joy during these really difficult and uncertain times, really follow that intuition. It could be photography, writing, it could be dance, it could be whatever. Just that is connecting to ourselves and to a sense, like I said before, other humans, because creative energy is connected hugely.
Awesome. Michelle Grew, thank you so much for spending another amount of time with us. And I hope that there will be a part three and that it won't be a year and 8 months from now, maybe.
Hopefully not. Yeah. We'll see where life goes, right? Yeah.
Awesome. Michelle, thank you.
Thank you so much, Eddie.